Hi everyone and welcome back to another one of my gramophone podcasts. I'm actually doing this from a hotel room in Holland where I'm waiting to check out. I've got another hour before I have to leave and then wait for an hour and a half till my train leaves Rotterdam and then I can get home. It seems no time since I did the last podcast, but here I am doing one again. In the meantime, I've bought quite a few 78s from an auction or two, so I've got lots of tracks to, bestow upon you. I'd like to begin with one which unfortunately hasn't transferred very clearly. It's a bit mushy in sound, but I want to play it to you because it features the wonderful, gorgeous, now sadly no longer with us, Lena Horne. And I want to play this because she was, for a long part of her life, great, great close friends with Billy Strayhorn, the great composer, pianist, who was, as it were, Duke Ellington's right-hand man. He wrote, of course, Take the A-Train, among other things, Lush Life, all sorts of things. This is another one of his great ballads. It's called Something to Live For, was recorded in the late 40s by Lena Horne, who was already then becoming the real talent she always had been, but she sort of grew into her talent. Some people arrive with it fully formed, others sort of get better as they get older. She certainly did. So with gorgeousness and talent in abundance, this is Lena Horne singing Billy Strayhorn's Something to Live For. And you'll see why I'm playing this particular song at the end of the podcast today.
I have almost everything a human could desire. Cars and houses, bearskin rugs to lie before my fire. But there's something missing. Something isn't there. It seems I'm never kissing someone I could care for. I want something to live for. Someone to make my life an adventure.
Again, I really must apologize. The sound quality of that 78 was really very mushy. For those of us who are used to listening to 78s, it probably isn't too bad. But for those of you who aren't, it probably confirms all your worst suspicions about 78s. As you'll hear, the sound is often much better than that. It's just the fact that I don't have professional equipment for getting rid of all that noise. I have to do my best with what I have. Anyhow, Billy Strayhorn, of course, had a very interesting career because being black and gay in 1940, you weren't going to get anywhere. And Duke Ellington, who had no prejudices about whether you were gay, straight or anything else, he didn't really care. He had no worries about his own sexuality and only cared about the quality of the music. And Billy became his right-hand man. He became an employee of Duke's, and he was able to carry on doing what he wanted to do for the rest of his life without the strain of being in the spotlight, and yet doing everything that he wanted to do with a band of absolutely world-class musicians to play his music. So I suppose he was pretty happy. And now, as I say, for something totally different. Somebody sent me this track and I want to share it with you. This is, for a change, a British airshot, not one from America like most of them seem to be, but it features an American on it. There was a double act run by, I think, Ronald Frankau with Tommy Handley in the 30s, Mr. Murgatroyd and Mr. Something Else. I can't remember the other name for the moment, but it was a standard double act that would sing the same songs with new lyrics every time, and it would be a sort of question and answer type comedy act. Here, however, during World War II, a visiting star from Hollywood, Edward G. Robinson, no less than he, takes the place of one of these two, and he and Tommy Handley, who was of course going through his highest level of stardom as a member of the cast of Itmar, a comedy program of which I played you an excerpt earlier in my podcast. Here they do this Mr. Murgatroyd type routine, but as I say, with the added interest of having a visiting American taking one of the parts. I find it very amusing and really gets you the feel of the time. So let's go back to World War II, and this is what you would have heard one day on the BBC.
Oh, Mr. Robinson.
Yeah?
Now, Mr. Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
You have just arrived here from the USA.
That's right.
And the question on my list is, do lemons still exist? And do bananas curve the same old way?
Well, Mr. Handley.
Yeah?
Yes, Mr. Handley.
Oh?
It's true there's lots of fruit there, I agree. But there's still one here I've seen. It's the raspberry, I mean.
I don't get it, Mr. Robinson.
You will shortly, Mr. T. Mr. Handley.
Hello?
Oh, Mr. Handley.
Yeah?
Is it true that here in England, more or less, fellows have no time to spoon underneath the silvery moon, and all the girls are in the ATS?
Oh, Mr. Robinson. Now, Mr. Robinson, you must have heard that nonsense in a bar. Why, ever since the war, there's been more love than before.
That's the berries, Mr. Handley.
No, the blackout, Mr. R.
There you are, the unlikely duo of Tommy Handley and Edward G. Robinson. You wouldn't expect to find that anywhere. Well, that was a rather short little clip, but well worth putting on, I thought. Here's another airshot. Again, I bought this recently in an auction. In fact, these were some of the records which were unsold at the end of the auction, and I managed to get them at minimum bid. And these are a collection of broadcasts by the Benny Goodman Orchestra from the Hotel Pennsylvania, I think it is, which was in Manhattan. And virtually every evening he would do a broadcast. Sometimes you find the same selections repeated a few days later. But the more interesting pieces tend to be the ones not performed by the whole band, but by his small groups. In the 30s, he gave himself the opportunity to play more straight jazz by having small group interruptions, as it were, to the normal, rather more bland menu of dance tunes played by what was then called a swing orchestra, by having a trio and a quartet. The trio was himself together with Teddy Wilson on piano and Gene Krupa on drums, and when he wanted a quartet, he just added a fourth instrument, and that was, of course, Lionel Hampton on vibraphone. This was quite revolutionary in its time because half of the quartet were black and the other half were white. This was unusual in those days. The fact that I'm mentioning it at all tells us what society was like back then. Nowadays, you wouldn't even raise an eyebrow, really. Then it was significant. Anyway, the most interesting of all of these tracks is, for me at any rate, their version of Fats Waller's Handful of Keys. I've only ever heard that played by Fats Waller as a piano solo until now. This is basically a feature of a Teddy Wilson, another great jazz pianist whom I actually met towards the end of his life. Nevertheless, you get Benny Goodman playing a bit of it on clarinet, you get Lionel Hampton on vibes, and of course everything's backed up by the drums of Gene Krupa. Fascinating. This was recorded, or should I say transmitted, on the 27th of October 1937, live in New York City. So here is the Benny Goodman Quartet. You may have the added joy of hearing a small introduction by the incredibly bland radio presenters that they had in those days, who seemed to talk as if they haven't the faintest clue about anything that they're introducing. But that's the way their style was. No doubt somebody in years to come will think precisely the same about me. Nevertheless, here is Handful of Keys, played by the Benny Goodman Quartet.
Benny Goodman Quartet. Teddy Wilson at the piano, Gene Krupa at the drums, Lionel Hampton vibraphone, and Benny Goodman himself on the clarinet, and their tune, A Handful of Keys. Take it away, boys.
Benny Goodman Quartet back in 1937, and now another lurch to a completely different form of music, as any regular listeners will know is quite normal in my podcast. Because I played a clip earlier that was very short, I can now afford to play a really long track. Back in September 2010, I think it is, I played a wonderful recording of Suzel Buondì from the opera L'Amico Fritz by Mascagni, sung by the incomparable Tito Schipa with Mafalda Favaro. However, there are two other recordings which rival that wonderful version. They were both made by the same tenor, much younger than Tito Schipa, and his name was Ferruccio Tagliavini, again a tenor whose track I've already played at some point during my run of podcasts. This, however, is one of his duet recordings. He made one recording with then the fairly young Magda Oliveru, who I'm delighted to see is still alive at the age of 101, and indeed, if you go on YouTube, you can actually see her singing at the age of 99, and it's a strange comment on the state of opera today that she sings better at the age of 99 than 99% of the sopranos at the height of their career right now. Really amazing woman. She, in fact, was one of the great Toscas at the age of 60-odd, when people are usually well retired from singing soprano. She went to New York and took it by storm. And again, on YouTube, you can actually see her singing Visi d'Arte, not quite at that age, but certainly well into her 50s. However, I'm not going to play you that version. Magda Oliveira was 3 years older than Ferruccio Tagliavini. His years are 1913 to 1995. He was married, however, with a woman 10 years older than he, and her name was Pia Tassinari, another great soprano, also occasionally singing mezzo roles. She was born in 1903, and I think she died the same year as her husband, 1995. Here they are, back in around 1941 or so, about the time they actually got married, so you get a real feeling of a love song between them. The only thing wrong is, of course, in the opera, the tenor is supposed to be many years older than the soprano, and here, in reality, the roles were reversed. It doesn't make any effect on the singing, of course, which is absolutely of supreme quality. So I'm just going to sit back and forget I'm doing this podcast and enjoy this track, which is wonderful. Suzel Buondi from L'Amico Fritz, Ferruccio Tagliavini, and Pia Tassinari.
Suzel Buondi, d'un gaio rosignolo, la voce mi svegliò. Mi piace come canti.
Oh, signor Fritz,
quei fiori son per me,
per voi li ho creati.
Well, 8 or 9 minutes there of total bliss, as far as I was concerned at any rate. And you'll probably feel sort of hard done by because I spoke about Magda Oliveira so much. Maybe in my next podcast I'll make good on that, because I've just found an amazing recording of her. Next time. However, now it's time for one of the great early masters of jazz, Johnny Dodds, who you'll find on the Hot 5 recordings fronted by Louis Armstrong, was a little older than Louis. He was born in 1892 and sadly only lived till 1940. Indeed, you'll hardly find a recording of him after 1930, because after the age of 40 he was continually ill and indeed died in 1940 from, I believe, a heart condition. He had a heart attack in Chicago in August 1940. So here he is in the late 20s when he was fronting a band, amongst other things, called the Chicago Foot Warmers. Now in the 50s there was a thing in England called skiffle, wherein people played all sorts of strange instruments made out of bits and pieces you found around the house, such as a T-chest bass. And one of the things I know they used was an old washboard as a form of percussion. But nothing's new under the sun. They were doing this in the 20s. In fact, sometimes Johnny Dodds' band was called something with the word washboard in it. They changed their names as required. Here, however, the band is called the Chicago Foot Warmers. This recording is contemporary with the ones made with Louis Armstrong as the Hot Five, recorded the 3rd of December 1927. This tune is called Balling the Jack, but it's got nothing to do with a song made famous later by Danny Kaye. Unlike the first track I gave you, this is cleaned up very well. This is a 78, but it sounds really good. So I hope you'll enjoy this. Johnny Dodds, one of the first great masters of New Orleans clarinet. Great and very influential Johnny Dodds. Well, I've often commented on the fact that people who you don't associate as being involved with one another actually lived precisely at the same time. Duke Ellington, for instance, was born in 1899 and lived till 1974. Also born in 1899 was somebody called Helen Francesca Traubel. She was, like Duke Ellington, American, but of course she was a concert and opera singer, best known for her roles in Wagner. However, she came from St. Louis in Missouri, and she went on, although she sang right up till 53 at the Metropolitan Opera, she began later on in her career to also sing songs from the musicals. And I've mentioned before that opera is really a musical written in the 19th century when they didn't have microphones. That's really the only major difference. Therefore, it's very interesting to hear opera singers when they approach musicals of that era. They might have problems now with rock-based musicals, but certainly back then, there's not that gap between opera and musicals, particularly if the singer was born in the USA, so that they understood the genre completely. So here, once more, last time it was Nan Merriman, I give you a famous opera singer singing one of the great songs of the musical comedy world. This one is played a lot by jazz musicians because of its wonderful chord sequence, and it's called All the Things You Are. This dates from, I'm not quite sure when, probably late 40s, early 50s, and Helen Traubel, well, here she is.
Springtime that makes a lonely winter seem long.
And with Helen Trouble, amazingly, we're at the end of another podcast so quickly. I began it with a song sung by Lena Horne and a song written by the great Billy Strayhorn. And there was indeed a reason for me to do so. I've just come out of the studio myself, finishing a recording, finally, of a song I wrote a few years ago. I'd set myself the challenge of trying to write a song in the style of Billy Strayhorn, and he's one of the most sophisticated musical brains ever. And that means as soon as you try and write in that style, you're landed in all sorts of chords, some of which, at least in my case, you don't even know the name of. Somehow I got stuck in a remote key in the middle eight and had to get back to the original key. Oh, but strangely enough, it sort of wrote itself. I wrote this whole song in about a quarter of an hour, and the words didn't take much longer either to the song, but I never did record it. First, I did a version with some friends in America, particularly Doug White, and the studio kindly wiped it by accident afterwards. But recently, I've arranged it. I tried to do it for saxophones, but there are no good samples for saxophones, so I ended up changing it round, and now it's got strings instead. I finished the recording literally about a week ago, so you're all the first to hear it. I hope you'll like my new recording of my song, Feeling My Feelings Falling. This podcast goes up, by the way, on the 1st of February, just after my birthday. And as always, my favoured birthday gift would be for you to send a link to this podcast to every friend you've ever had, Facebook, anything. Let it go viral so that other people can hear some of the wonderful music which is there sitting in the grooves of all those shellac records sitting on my shelves and of which few people know anything. But it's great. So until the next time, au revoir.
Feeling my feelings falling, memories growing old, all of my yellows turning to gold. First springtime came a calling, then came the summer sun. Days seem to fade before they've begun. One moment I thought I'd found thought it over. Now when there's no more pain, you come and whisper love's old refrain. I'm feeling my feelings fall. Thank you. out waiting. Now when I thought it over, now when there's no more pain, you come and whisper love. Oh,